And Stefan has just joined Chuck.
Excuse me, at this time the call is being recorded. Thank you.
Shall I do the roll call for you, Chuck?
Yes, let's start the meeting right now. And Glenn, please do the roll call.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. On the call, we have Chuck Gomes, Caroline Greer, Edmund Chun, Tim Ruiz, Stefan van Gelder. We do not yet have Adrian Kinderis nor Terry Davis. For the non-contracted parties house, we have Saeed Jamil, Mike Rodenbach, Christina Rosette, David Taylor, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, Jamie Wagner, Rafik Damak, Bill Drake, Rosemary St. Clair, Olga Cavelli, Andrei Kalashnikov, and Alan Greenberg. And we have apologies from Han Chuan Lee. And we have Deborah Hughes, who has just joined the call. Thank you, Chuck. Over to, oh, yes, and for staff, I'm sorry. We have Julie Hedlund, Liz Gaster, Patrick Jones, Craig Schwartz, Marika Koenig, Kurt Pritz, Dan Halloran, David Olive, Scott Pinson, and myself, Glenda Saint-Jury. Have I left off anyone?
Yes, Glenn Robert Garth is here.
Who is that?
That's me, Chuck, Rob Hogarth.
Oh, hi, Rob. Okay.
Ah, hi, Rob. Right. Thank you.
Hey, Glenn, I don't think I heard my name, Ken Bauer.
Ken Bauer, thank you. And Mary Wong has just joined. Thank you, Chuck. Over to you.
Welcome, Mary. And, Glenn, we got to make sure that we don't slide staff because they do a lot of hard work helping us, so... So I appreciate that, all the work that they do. So glad we got all those names in there. Welcome, everybody, to the call, and I especially want to thank those that called in a little early. I think this is the quickest we've been able to get started in one of the meetings since I've been chairing, so much appreciated because we have a very full agenda. We'll start off with updates to any statements of interest, and I'll just briefly reiterate or refer to what I said in a disclosure of interest in the last meeting with regard to agenda item 4, the implementation of new GTLD recommendation 2 on confusingly similar names. Again, I want to point out that my company, VeriSign, will be applying for some names where there might be confusing similarity issues. So I want to make everybody aware of that, and I will ask Stefan again to take over the chair when we get to that that point. Does anyone else have a statement of interest update? Okay, seeing or hearing none, we'll go on then to the agenda itself. Any suggested changes to the agenda? Okay. And you can see there in the minutes, the minutes for 20 May were approved on 7 June. They are posted, so anybody can refer to those. Going on to item 2, the prioritization of the GNSO work. The only thing we want to do here is just get a status update in terms of the process that's ongoing right now from Ken. So I will turn it over to Ken and ask him to give us a brief update.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Ken Bauer. As of Samoa time yesterday, the 9th, we ended up with 19 responses or participants sending in ratings. I'm pleased to report that everyone followed the directions. All the spreadsheets I got back were in perfect order. The aggregation effort went very, very smoothly. And, in fact, tomorrow we're setting up a sort of a test just to test out some features of Adobe Connect and some things that we've already done before, but we want to do them in a practice setting. So that effort will be taking place tomorrow with selected staff colleagues in preparation for Brussels. I So that's about a 90% response rate, and we're very pleased to have seen it.
Thank you very much, Ken. Any questions or comments?
Chuck, this is Olga.
Go ahead.
I cannot find my writing hand. Sorry. Just one comment about some very good comments that were sent to the council list from Stefan, from Alan, and I don't recall who else did a comment. Just a brief note that this is the first exercise that we are doing. We will have a face-to-face meeting in Brussels. The same, we in the group had the same questions that you are raising. We wondered if we had to do a managerial analysis of the list or just prioritizing it. And finally, we decided to prioritize it only under value. We just discard other variables that could be cost or difficulty. So I would encourage everyone to have these questions in mind and bring them to the face-to-face meeting that we will have in Brussels so we can work on this exercise and make it better.
And one of the things we will do on the 23rd in Brussels, after we've done the group exercise on Saturday, is we will start the process for talking about how it can be improved, the pluses and minuses and so forth. So keep in mind and keep notes of the things that you experienced, including the things that were communicated on the list, because they're very good points. And hopefully, after doing this thing once, we can make some good improvements as well. Thanks for sharing that, Olga. Any other questions or comments? Okay, going on to agenda item 3, the GNSO Affirmation of Commitments Drafting Team Endorsement Process. Hopefully everybody reviewed that. I want to thank the drafting team again for all the time they spent on this and Bill for leading that effort. And I'd like to turn it over to Bill to give a brief overview of the proposed endorsement process. Bill, it's all yours.
Yeah, I was on mute. You know, we have talked about this before, and I imagine everybody's read it. It's fairly straightforward. I don't know how much more detail you'd like to hear about it. It's almost getting a little tired. but basically, the process is not terribly complicated. We decided that we would avoid any extraneous politics and undue agitation about this by simply giving each stakeholder group the opportunity to endorse one candidate, as I think I've run through before, and with certain kind of caveats that we added about exactly how one might want to do that. Stakeholder group could choose to endorse an applicant who's identified with and has been endorsed by another stakeholder group. In other words, stakeholder group does not have to put forward one of its own, or it may choose not to endorse any, and they are encouraged in their internal deliberations to try to take into account diversity. And when we go through the process and arrive at the four bottom-up endorsements, if we turn out to have a pool that does not meet fairly minimal thresholds of diversity, that is to say no more than half of the four being from one geographical region and not all the same gender, then we would have the option as a group to vote to add one or two more names in order to make it more balanced. So that is the process, and then there were the additional requirements, which we've talked about before, including, you know, indicating that people should have some, should talk about their experience with the GNSO or lack thereof, and their special technical or other expertise with direct relevance to the responsibilities of the review team. So that is the process as it's laid out. It's very straightforward. There are a number of different things in the wind right now with the whole review team process. As you know, we have a motion for today, essentially. I need to hear from people about that. There's also a deadline for people to put in their names as independent experts for the APRT tomorrow, and, of course, the upcoming Who Is an SSR teams. We need to have people into the pool by 15 July. And then we have a few weeks after that to do our endorsements. So that is the process. Now, I guess the question is whether we want to proceed with the motion or not. I saw some email on the list saying that perhaps some people need more time, so maybe we could talk about that.
I see a couple hands in queue. Christina.
I actually have some requests for clarifying amendments, and so I don't know if we want to handle those first or if there is a constituency or stakeholder group that would prefer a delay, do that.
Let's hold off on that. Keep your hand up in the window there, and let's see if there's any general questions or comments first.
Okay.
Paul?
Well, no, I would like to refer to the same. What Christina raised.
All right, very good. Then let's go back to Christina, and please go ahead.
Okay. These are points that I think I understand, and I think what we are saying, but there was a request from some folks in the IPC for just a little bit more clarity in the language. And the first point is that, at least what I have told people, is that under point number four, that if, I don't even know how to phrase this in a way that isn't entirely confusing, but that basically if you have a nominee from each of the four stakeholder groups, and if the diversity aspirations in number three are met, then the council will endorse those four nominees, full stop. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. I think we could probably avoid a whole lot of heartburn in the community, or at least my segment of the community, if we could find a way to say that. And since I'm asking, I'll try and come up with something that I can post very quickly. The second point...
Christina.
Yeah?
I just wanted to ask, does this sentence not work for you? If the list does not meet the above-mentioned diversity objectives, the council as a whole may choose to endorse up to two additional candidates from the applicant pool.
Like I said, I understood what the intention was, but there were some folks who wanted the additional clarity. The second point is that, again, it's my understanding that the reference in point four to applicant pool in terms of pulling those two additional candidates is really referring to the additional nominees. What's the language we've used? The alternative, the additional candidates in point number two. And if so, if we could actually say that again, because the concern that's been raised is that it wasn't clear on its face whether or not, if the diversity objectives were not met, would the council then kind of exercise its own prerogative to go back to the entire applicant pool as opposed to the additional candidates?
Bill, you want to respond to that? I thought it was just the ones who identified the GNSO, but it's a good question.
Yeah, to me, the applicant pool is the people who identified as GNSO. We're not going to nominate somebody for the ASO.
No. What I meant was that, for example, in point two, we talk about each stakeholder can identify a nominee as well as one or two additional candidates that it could support. Right?
Right. But the latter
being
an internal thing.
Right. But the question is, if we get to the point where we have to identify additional candidates in order to meet diversity objectives, are we then turning only to those one or two additional candidates identified by each stakeholder group, or are we going back to the bigger pool of everybody who identified for GNSO? Folks in the IPC are fine if it's the former, namely the stakeholder groups have all identified their additional candidates, and we'll go through that. They're not so fine with the idea that the council could then essentially ignore the additional candidates, because at that point there would really be no reason to have them, and go to the broader applicant pool.
Well, this Chuck, in response to that concern there, what happens if the four stakeholder groups only nominate one person? Then you have nothing to work with to try and make the slate more diverse, both with regard to geographic diversity and also gender diversity.
Fair enough. Maybe what we could do is that the first alternative would be, in the event that the diversity objectives are not met, the council would look to the one or two additional candidates, if any, identified by each stakeholder group, and then, if necessary, to the broader applicant pool.
Wouldn't that, I'm sorry, Christina, but that would seem then to introduce a lot of extra concern that, oh, my God, we have to make sure strategically that we identify a few other people in order to bound the pool. And we were thinking more in a more flexible way that people might just want to have in their mind backups in the event that we had to go and say, hey, let's think about a fifth and a sixth. So I think we were thinking about the whole pool. If you're saying we have to commit that each stakeholder group has to lock in, review the group, and come up with a hard list of people that it could support and so on, I mean, we could do it that way, but then you're making it a fairly political and time-consuming process to me.
I certainly understand those concerns. I think from the IPC's perspective, it was the idea that notwithstanding the fact that we, you know, the commercial stakeholder group may have identified its first choice and two additional candidates, that the council could still make the decision to kind of go beyond that. That was really the concern.
Well,
go ahead, Bill.
Okay, but I guess my only point would be, what in suggesting this, we were simply saying, hey, it'd be useful if you guys kind of thought about who else you like. That doesn't mean that everybody else in the council is going to like them, too. So the idea that the whole council would be constrained to not look at people that nobody bothered to mention, and, in fact, we say that the notification of the council is helpful but not required. So, I mean, the way you're suggesting it, it would seem that we would have to have every stakeholder group formally notify the council of everybody it could live with in order to bound the pool and then decide that that's the only pool we look at.
From the IPC's perspective, that is a preferable scenario than having the council unilaterally kind of go beyond what each stakeholder group has identified. Again, just the constituency preference.
So, Christina, would the IPC be comfortable, and I'm not saying that Bill and Caroline will endorse this as friendly, but I'm just trying to understand, would they be comfortable if the council does go back to try and get a little more diversity, if they first of all looked at any secondary candidates mentioned by stakeholder groups, and then, if necessary, went to the broader pool of those who selected the GNSO as their association?
Yeah, I think that would be fine. I think if the default is to go to the additional candidates, and then if the diversity objectives still are not met, go to the broader applicant pool, that is perfectly reasonable to me.
So, Bill, I wasn't trying to take your role there, but I wanted to make sure I understood if that would satisfy it. I'll give it back to you to respond to that.
I don't mind, Chuck. You can. I don't prefer what is being suggested, but it's not up to me. It's up to the group. It seems to me that I don't see why a priori we have to start to impose all kinds of limitations on what the council could do. I mean, if there's, 15 people who have applied for the position, why should we say that if the council is looking to get diversity, you can't look at the 11 that we didn't endorse? It has to be constrained to look only at the five that stakeholder groups thought to go through this process on. I mean, it seems to me it's just adding a layer of complexity and politicization without any particular value. If all four stakeholder groups, a majority of 60% of both houses, decide that they want somebody, it doesn't matter to me whether there's somebody that a particular stakeholder group chose to mention. But that's just my own view.
I
yield to the majority.
Any amendments will have to be decided by you, Bill, and Caroline, as whether they're friendly or whether we vote on them. So we'll come back to that. Christina, you're going to submit some language to the list. Is that
I do, and I have one last question, and it's really raised by kind of tying back into how many slots are there? And that is, I know that when we first talked about this, we were very clear that the council didn't want, you know, we were assuming it was four, we were going to put forward four, full stop. And the question that has come up is that in light of the communication from Giannis, is that still the plan?
I think we should ask for four. As a default.
I mean, I agree. It's just the concern really is if the council is going to take the position that if there are only two slots for GNSO allocated in a particular review team, and as a result, they're only going to put forward two candidates, how those two candidates are decided. That's really the question.
Let me jump in here. We're going to come back to that issue of
okay.
how many should
right.
be on the review teams after we deal with the motion.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So
that's it. I'm done.
Okay, now. Can I make a comment on that, though? I think that, I mean, I don't know what the others in the working group felt, but I guess I thought that, you know, we put four together regardless. We put four forward, and if there ends up only two seats on a particular review team, the selectors pick amongst the four. But
right.
I might be wrong about that.
No, you're right. I think they ultimately have the decision to decide the makeup of the team. So we're trying to influence that. But you're right, Tim. That's my understanding as well. Volf, was your possible amendment similar to Christina's?
Well, yes, in that sense. Well, let me just add a few words to that. Because Christina was a little bit just saying, okay, from the perspective of the IPC point of view. So we had, frankly speaking, a discussion on the CSG, the commercial stakeholder group, about that. And you know, it is still not, let me say, not. Not consensus about the process as a whole. That means there's the question about, you know, how is the influence in the process from the stakeholder group point of view versus the council point of view. And so that's what Christina was outlining was the result of that. It means it would help us, you know, to see that the stakeholder groups themselves get more, let me say, control or more influence on the overall process as it is intended to have when we can go along that intention, well, to amend the motion or the process that way Christina raised. So that's the background of that. And it would help us because otherwise, really, I would have to raise the question of about delaying the motion again if we cannot find a consensus on that point.
I'm not sure I understood the point, Wolf. Consensus on what point?
On that point with regards to the process, you know, amendments which Christina outlined. So with regard to...
Oh, okay. So it's the same point that she raised.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it now. Thank you.
Okay, so just to clarify, because we thought we were actually maximizing stakeholder group influence on the process by basically thinking everybody gets one, but if the argument is that we would not want to have a diversity exercise in which the council as a whole selects from the entire group of applicants, and we would only pick from those that were mentioned by the stakeholder groups. That if that's how we're construing stakeholder group influence, then I understand it better. But then I suppose we would have to also change this language that says notification to the council is helpful but not required, because now instead of making it a relatively relaxed thing, we're turning it into a bargaining point on which everybody needs to mobilize.
So, Wolf, let me ask you the same question that I asked Christina. Would the ISPC would your group be willing, be comfortable with the way I worded it before, where if the council does decide to try and get, make the nominees more diverse, if they first look to any all of the alternate candidates from the SGs, and then if that was not able to do, only then go to the a broader pool of GNSO.
Yes, it would help a lot. And but in addition, you know, it doesn't. Let me say, in addition, we will need to have an additional discussion, not on the motion, but on the process itself in Brussels. But it doesn't matter, you know. It would help right now for the for this motion. But the overall a general discussion about this the process itself should be taken again in Brussels.
Okay, so I guess I'm not understanding you there. So if the these changes were made like I described,
yes.
and the council approved them or if they were accepted as friendly. We would vote on the motion today, but then review it in Brussels. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, not this motion, because as I see, we have still another review team to look at, because we are talking about who is policy and SSR review team right now.
Oh, so you're suggesting that we may change the process before the fourth review team. Is that right?
I'm sorry about the. So we are just resolving a motion, talking about the motion regarding the two review teams.
No, I think that's incorrect. The task of the drafting team and then our task is to develop what we hope would be a process that could be used. Going forward, including for the fourth review team, that doesn't mean. I mean, anytime we approve something, we can always come back and change it. So let's keep that in mind. But Bill, wasn't that your understanding as well?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Why?
What we tasked the drafting team to do several meetings ago, after we'd done the first review team. Was to develop what could be a permanent process, permanent in quotes because it's never permanent. We can always change it, right? But It was supposed to be a process that hopefully will work going forward, not only with all four of the review teams in this cycle, but in the future as well.
But this is what I cannot admit at this time because. So of the discussion we have within the stakeholder group. So there is still discussion needed, time for discussion. But the only thing I could do right now is to talk about a motion with regards to the next two RTs, which have to be established this year. But for the next one afterwards, so there might be a different one.
So your group thinks that we should go through this exercise every time we have to do a review team?
Not every time, but once again.
So am I understanding you correctly then that you would not be able to vote on this, that you would request a delay on this motion today?
Either that or if you're just talking about the motion, that means there is one resolved, which concerns for all future AOC review team selections, including the both we are talking right now about. If you could delete the all future AOC review team selection, just only referring to the two R teams, that would be okay.
Okay. So it sounds like we have a couple different proposed amendments to the motion. And keep in mind, the motion references the process, so some of the changes that are being talked about, I think, are in the process itself. One of them is Christina's, and the second one is Wolf's. So my first question is to Bill, and then it'll be to Caroline. Without seeing the exact wording, which we're going to need to deal with, and we may come back to later in the meeting, is this something that you think you would let's talk about Christina's first of all. Is this something that you would consider a friendly amendment, Bill?
I guess I would have to see the language since we're
okay. All right, that's a fair
we're
response.
We're being as legal as possible here.
I'm typing as fast as I can.
Okay, and all right. So let me suggest this. Let's move on to the discussion of
Chuck,
the composition of the review teams, and we'll come back to the motion. Yes,
Chuck. Bill? Are we modifying the motion, or are we modifying the
both.
The actual proposal?
I think it's the actual proposal, but the proposal is incorporated into the motion.
Mm-hmm.
So
right, but there was a working group that actually developed the proposal. So, you know, if Bill and Carolyn are okay with it, I'm okay with it. So I don't want to throw a wrench in the works that way. But, I mean, there are other people involved, I think, a few at least. So I just don't want to cut anybody out of the process, you know, by... So, well, here's what the working group agreed to, but we modified it at council. Maybe we can do that. I don't know. I guess if the council
the drafting team was tasked with making a recommended process for council consideration. So the council certainly can do that. The council can also go back to the drafting team. So that those
okay,
are prerogatives.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bill.
All right. That's fine.
If we were to go the route that we're discussing now, what would be to keep NCSG from simply saying we can live with everybody, and therefore it's the whole pool anyway?
I don't think there's anything to keep them from that. I mean, you know, and then the council does take that extra step. All of those names would be in the first step of the pool. You're right. That's a way of I get your point. Well,
yeah.
So
I think that the decision about whether to add a diversity name or two, which bear in mind, selectors probably in the end would not select. Because I suspect that they'll select the people that were nominated by the stakeholder groups in the first instance, is properly a council decision, and 60% of both houses would seem to be an adequate protection. But if people feel that we need to limit the pool to selected candidates favored by particular groups, we can do it that way. But then I would be inclined to simply notify that we support everybody. And also, I guess we would have to change the language here that says that notification of the council is helpful but not required, because now we're mandating that everybody go through every file and decide on each name and then notify the council. Otherwise, you couldn't do this.
Okay. Now, I'm going to jump ahead to the discussion. We'll come back to the motion in a little bit. Once we have written amendments, so the issue has come up, and if you go down in the agenda a little bit further, you will see copied into there the recommendations. And I'm sorry for the format there; it came out terrible in what I'm looking at. Hopefully, you can make more sense out of it in where you're looking at the agenda. The recommendation that Giannis came back with as one of the selectors was that there only be two for the GNSO, on both working teams. My analysis of the comment on the list, and by the way, I appreciate the excellent contributions on the list in that regard, is there is strong, if not unanimous, support for requesting four on both teams. Is there any disagreement with my conclusion there? Okay, very good. And then, so I will respond to Giannis, and I will try to make a strong case and not just say, hey, the GNSO sticks by its guns and wants four each. I'll try to put some justification there, and several of you provided some good justification in that regard. I will use that and notify Giannis of that position. Any questions or comments on that? And Christina, did you still have your hand up for this, or is that your...
Oh, no, that's my old one. I'm writing, sorry.
That's all right, we all do it. All right, now, Bill, go ahead.
Okay, I was just wondering if you've had any further discussion and clarification from Giannis and Peter why they're coming back and saying this. I mean, as I look at the ATRT, I don't see the argument that... it's too big, or that having representation of all the interests has been a barrier. So have they given you any indication, Chuck, of just why they want to go this route?
Nothing more than what we saw. In the message from Giannis that I forwarded to the council, and I'm sure budget considerations are part of the issue, like Giannis said. But he also mentioned the effectiveness in keeping the size of the group manageable. So I have not had any other discussions. Now, there may be additional discussions after I send this message to him, so we will see. Anything else on that? All right. Have the amendments to the motion been submitted?
No, I'm still writing.
Okay, all right.
Sorry.
Then what we're going to do is we will try to come back to this at the end of the meeting and deal with it. If we don't succeed, this may have to be deferred until our meeting in Brussels, and the posting on the site will continue to be a draft. Going on then to item four in the agenda, I want to turn the chair role over to Stefan. Stefan, would you please take over from here?
Yes, Chuck, I will. Thank you very much. So this is the second time we are looking at this agenda item. We had a discussion about this at our previous meeting. I'm sure you'll all remember that. And perhaps I can start by asking either Edmund or Rafiq, I don't know if I think Edmund is on the call, to explain how the motion has been amended. The motion has been changed from the one we saw at our previous meeting, so perhaps it would help everybody understand what's happened since then. If Edmund, if you could just chime in there and take us through those changes.
Sure. Thank you, Stefan. After the discussion and also much of the discussion online on the mailing list, made a number of changes, a lot of them editorial changes based on some of the comments received. But the main change to the motion is the addition of a consideration for a public comment period before any further action, basically before the council sends in a letter on the subject. So that has really been the main change, because a lot of the discussions around it, the process which the council makes such a suggestion to the board and staff.
Thanks, Edmund. Sorry.
I think that should be fine. I guess we don't have to go back to the background of the motion. I think it's been discussed quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks for that explanation. Just one clarifying question. Am I right in saying that the letter, the proposed letter to Kurt, has not changed beyond the point that you just mentioned?
Yeah, well, there was a highlighted version, sort of redlined version that was sent along. There were some editorial changes to it as well, especially a couple of changes that from comments from Christina on confusing the similarity and adjustment to make sure we don't preempt or a conflict with the IRT suggestions. But I think they're somewhat minor edits, unless people doesn't feel so.
Okay. Thanks, Edmund. Perhaps we can open it up for discussion at this stage. And I see, Mary, you have your hand up.
Hi, thanks, Stefan. Actually, my question wasn't about the content of the letter, but about the motion. So if Christina or somebody else wants to go first about the letter, I'm happy to hold my question till later.
I was opening it up for discussion, general discussion on the motion and the letter, so please go ahead.
Okay. So a few of us were just talking about this, and while we support, you know, the motion, I think, for the most part, our concern is that if this motion passes, it not be taken as a precedent of any kind for any sort of future council letters or council actions. We're not saying it would, but, you know, we're just concerned it would be. So we're just wondering if there is a way, perhaps a sort of further resolve clause, to somehow enshrine somewhere that this is not to be taken as a precedent for future council action.
What is it that you would like not to see taken as a precedent? The fact that we go back the GNSO Council and propose changes to the DAG?
No. But more specifically to this motion, the opening of the 21-day comment period or any type of comment period.
So just to be extremely clear about what you're saying, you are saying that you do not think there should be any need for a comment period on a motion that the GNSO Council is making. Is that correct?
Well, let me try to... I think we're saying the same thing, but let me try to say this specifically in the way I've been thinking about it.
Yeah,
that nothing in this motion, including the opening of any comment period, be taken as a precedent for anything the Council might do subsequently. So that this basically is a one-off.
Yeah. I think I understand what you're saying, and we have had some discussion on the list about this, but perhaps it would be helpful for you to try, if you can, to draft a friendly amendment to the motion as you've proposed that there be another whereas clause added. Do you think you could do that while I go down the list of people that have requested the mic?
Sure, I'll try, and I'll send it to the Adobe Connect room in hopefully a few minutes.
That's great. Appreciate that. Thanks very much, Mary. Christina?
Two things. First, if I'm looking at it correctly, the wiki version may not be correct, although I may not be looking at the right thing. But in terms of the substance of the letter, Edmund, one of the things that's caused a whole lot of confusion, within the IPC is that, am I correct in understanding that the scope of this, particularly with regard to the letter, is intended to relate solely to visually similar strings? Because if that is, in fact, the intent, I think it probably would be helpful for clarity to make sure that that's in there. Because in trademark land,
I think
similarity means more than just visual similarity.
I'm trying to find the right words. I think the focus of which is on the initial evaluation of the string, and whatever the scope of the initial evaluation, that's really what the intent is for after.
Is that okay for you, Christina?
I think I understand what you're saying. It's just that the problem is that this could be read to really broaden the scope of what constitutes similarity for purposes of initial examination. I don't think that's the intent. I frankly would be thrilled if that was the case. But I think it's just, especially if we're going to put this out for public comment, I just see it as something that this is something people are going to get very confused about. So, for example, in the second bullet point, you could say, or the first bullet point, the same registry operator, da-da-da, could apply for a string that is visually similar to an existing or applied for string.
Are you proposing changes?
No, well, I'm just trying to figure out what exactly the scope of the proposal is, which was kind of the other thing that I was never clear on.
Edmund, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. The first bullet point for the letter, at this point doesn't talk about visual similar. I want to be clear. I think the intent is that we don't want to, we don't want to touch on that particular issue, and we'll leave it up to staff and to actually have the implementation on what is included in the initial evaluation. But the main thing for this note is really that there are cases where the initial evaluation may find a problem, but it really shouldn't be one, regardless of whether it's visual or regardless of whether it's just visual.
Okay.
You okay, Christina, with that?
I guess the question is really, does it? Do you have concern with the substance of which, and you're concerned with the public comment period where people would ask this question, or what's the?
Well, I just don't want to see a scenario that if we're going to put this out for public comment right smack in the middle of the Brussels meeting, I don't think it does anybody any good if people misunderstand what it is the letter says and comment on what is essentially the wrong thing. That's my concern.
I see. Again, I guess, is there any suggestion, wording changes that you want to suggest to make sure we don't get into that situation?
I'll come up with something.
That'll be great.
Okay. And while you two have been discussing, Bill has proposed some wording on the chat for the point that Christina was making, so perhaps everyone can have a look at that. Christina's just said she likes that, so that could be made into a friendly amendment. The problem is we'll run into a problem because I don't think Rafiq's on the call, and he's the second of the motion. But let's get to Jamie and then see what we have.
Jamie? Thank you, Stefan. We had today a call in the ICFCP constituency, and this item was of great concern. And the concern is that this confusion, or non-detrimental confusion, is something that would add an extra period to the evaluation of the new GTLD process. We wondered if this is necessary for this first version that, and first round that the DAG 4 is headed to, or if it, we could wait for the appearance of some cases that could appear in this first round that could be appreciated if this were confusion is not detrimental. and that it could be in the best interest of the users. So the position that was kind of a consensus in the ISPCP is that the proposition to delay this this amendment to a next round and not to put it in the first round of the GTLD applications. So as to judge from the real cases that appear. And also, it, I could not answer, this is a question, if, in the case that there is another period of re-evaluation of some confusion is detrimental or not, if this would require another fee from the applicant, because it seems to be necessary an extended fee for this extended work that will be required from staff.
Thanks, Jamie. On your sorry, did I cut you off there?
No, it's okay.
Sorry. Okay. On your second point, I think that's up for up to staff to answer. So I don't know if anyone from staff can address that point. Rafiq is apparently on the call. I couldn't see him on the Adobe, but he does show connected on MeetingView, so we're okay there, and we've had further resolves that's been proposed by Mary. So first of all, let's get to Jamie's question. Can anyone answer the point about the extra fees that might be involved? Hearing no one volunteer.
Oh, this is Kurt.
Kurt.
So the extra fees associated with extended evaluation are part of the now proposed $185,000 fee. So if you go to extended evaluation, that covers that. So this extended evaluation, you know, there'd be some estimation of, you know, how many extended evaluations there would be and how much it would cost to see if that would change the $185,000 fee at all. So the really short answer is the extended evaluation generally is covered in that fee.
Thanks, Kurt. Is that okay for you, Jamie?
It's an answer.
So this is Kurt going on. Then the other part of the question is, you know, if you're applying for two strings that are confusingly similar, then do you have to pay $185,000 fee for each one? And so right now I think the answer is yes, the way the guidebook is written. So, you know, the bad news is some will think you shouldn't have to pay for a similar string, and on the other hand, that fee would probably cover the cost of an extended evaluation. So you have to add that into the mix too, I think, that determination.
Thanks, Kurt. Jamie, you okay with that?
Okay.
Thanks. Chuck?
Yes, thanks.
Stefano,
thanks.
Can I try to answer the first part of Jamie's question? I just want to...
Sorry, Edmund, I didn't actually understand Jamie's first part to be a question, but rather a statement of intent. So if you saw a question in that, by all means.
Well, maybe Chuck can go first, and I'll put my hand up in that case.
Okay. Thanks, Stefan. Thanks, Edmund. With regard to Mary's point, I don't want to detract from what she was suggesting. That's fine, but... I just want to encourage people that have concerns about the process and what we have to do when the council make a motion to make sure you're involved in a couple of the GNSO improvements work teams and things that are coming to finalization now, because that's probably the best place to deal with that. Not that it shouldn't happen in this motion for this one case, but that going forward, if there's a concern there, let's make sure, I don't know if it's the GNSO council operations work team, probably, but it might even come up in the PDP or working group model team. So So just an encouragement there. With regard to Christina's points on this, it's important, I think, that we understand the new GTLD process. The first evaluation of strength similarity is just visual evaluation. And it's in the initial evaluation that would lead to extended the possibility of extended evaluation, but only if the applicant requests an extended evaluation. So now, with regard to Jamie's concerns and the ISP's concerns, the consequence of deferring this to a second round is that a string could be applied for and be denied without any chance of appeal whatsoever in that initial evaluation. So, for example, if the Welsh wanted to apply for .cym as a top-level domain name, they could they could be eliminated even if we as the .com registry were okay with the way they were offering it, and if they were offering it in a way that was not detrimental to people with regard to .com or the Welsh people or whatever, but it would just be eliminated, and there would be no means to correct that in the current process. And so I think it's an injustice to some of the possible applicants to delay this to the second round. So I think that there's a problem with that. Now, with regard to the motion itself, all we're asking for is a public comment period, and I agree with Christina that if there's something that's not clear, let's make it clear so that at the same time we will have opportunity to make things clear during the public comment period as that goes on. Thanks.
Thank you, Chuck. Edmund?
Thank you. Yeah, I think what Chuck mentioned is valid. I want to add one more point on Jamie's first comment, which is deferring it to second round. I think the problem with that is that right now there's no recourse, and which means that as an applicant, I really wouldn't put in the application because it costs $185,000, and I wouldn't get any of it back because it's turned down in the initial evaluation, and I can't appeal. So by deferring, it really means that if you try to look at the experience, there will be a set of zero almost, because nobody would apply for it, given the conditions. So I don't think it works by, you know, sitting back and waiting for the second round, because you won't see the applications coming in the first round if this is not corrected.
Okay, thank you. Jamie?
Just a point of clarification, because I'm not very aware of the whole process. But now, there is not a process of judging confusion that is already in place in the DAC 4.
Now, that's a question you're asking.
I'm asking to Edmund or to Chuck.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I'm asking to Edmund or to Chuck if the current version of the DAG 4 or the process of judging any possible confusion does not have room for any risk recourse to judgment of the point of non detrimental confusion.
Okay. Jamie, can I answer that then?
Yes, please go ahead, Chuck.
Jamie, no, there isn't. I think Kirk answered that question. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kirk. But he answered that question in our last meeting. If a string is eliminated because there's the decision that it's visually confusingly similar in initial evaluation only, okay, but then it's eliminated and it's not eligible for extended evaluation in the current DAG. So that's it. Now, I think Edmund may have been a little bit incorrect in saying that there's no refund at that point, but I don't have that in front of me. Kurt can probably correct that. But there would be still significant fees that have been paid at that point and not refundable.
Kurt, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, this is Kurt. So if your question is did Chuck characterize the current guidebook correctly, the answer is yes. I guess if another clarification I would point out was to Edmund's comment, if you were to not be approved based on confusion in the initial evaluation, there'd be a substantial refund available. Not the whole 185, but, you know, a sizable fraction, and it's the exact numbers in the guidebook.
I think it's 35%, 70% that you get back or something like that, if memory serves.
May I jump in?
Yes,
I would like to ask to Kurt then if the interpretation is correct that a mere visual confusion would and staff or the judgment who judged this similarity would consider only the visual confusion, and this would be the only aspect to be judged.
Hi, this is Kurt again. So if I interpret your question the right way, there's two checks for confusion. One is a check for visual confusion as part of the initial evaluation, and then there's a check for string confusion based on visual similarity, meaning oral, whatever, you know, other types of similarity. There's an opportunity for parties withstanding to object to that string based on all types of similarity. That's later in the process. And so that's one. Two, the initial check for similarity will be conducted by an independent panel that's given a standard that's written into the guidebook that the similarity has to reach a certain degree that's specified in the guidebook, and so there's been a lot of discussion about the crafting of that standard and what's required and what tools the evaluators use. So, but that's the process, right?
So, may I jump in again?
Yeah.
So there is some subjectivity in the judgment of visual similarity right now, and this subjectivity would not allow to something that would consider a detrimental effect on the from the user point of view. I mean, this is really not covered in the subjectivity of the judgment of visual similarity. I mean, I cannot figure out how it can be very definitely and objectively determined. So I think there will be some subjectivity in this judgment right now. This is in a certain way would consider this detrimental effect to the user. That's was discussed today, and I was arguing for the possibility of some confusion could be. Some confusion would be in the best interest of the user. But I must confess that I was not able Chuck is to convince everybody of this, exemplified with the cases that are in the motion, but still what's argued is that this subjectivity is already in the present judgment process.
Okay, Jamie, thanks. Kurt, do you want to say any more?
Sure. This is Kurt. Yes, the panelists and the judgment about confusion will be subjective, and in fact, it's designed that way. There's quite a bit of discussion during implementation planning that involved GNSO Council members and GNSO members and other groups about whether this could be an objective test, based strictly on the score of an algorithm, or subjective. And the community opinion on this was quite clear that confusion is a human subjective reaction to seeing two strings, and so the implementation plan coupled that input with creating a standard that would not unnecessarily keep out strings to provide the clearest test possible, understanding that it is in fact subjective. And so at the end of the day, in the balancing, objective test versus a test with subjectivity, but reliance on a very objective algorithm versus the fact that it's a sort of human emotion. I think that the best solution has been arrived at, the balancing that's taken place that's directed us toward this subjective test is, probably the right decision, and clearly, the one with the majority support, clear majority support in the community. But you're exactly right with your assessment.
Thanks, Kurt. I'd like to cut the discussion off here, if I may, just to go back to Mary's proposed friendly amendment. Just one question to Christina. You just mentioned that you posted some language to the council list. I just scanned your email very quickly while trying to concentrate on the Adobe as well. I'm right in thinking that email is referencing agenda item 3, am I? And not this agenda item.
No, I mean it's the language that I just told Edmund that I would put together.
Okay, so I was wrong. I misread your email. So you are also proposing a friendly amendment to this motion?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's get to Mary's first. Mary, can you read yours out, please?
Sure. Let me scroll back up. So this would add an additional resolve clause to the end of the motion, and it would read, further resolved that this motion shall not serve as a precedent requiring the GNSO Council to adhere to a public comment period requirement for any future GNSO Council letters.
Did someone from staff get that? And could that be put up on the Adobe, please, so people can see it? And while that's happening, Christina, can I ask you to read through yours?
I'm sorry. I was just saving it as a red line so I could post it. Sorry.
Do you need some time?
Yeah. Let me just post it as a red line, and then I can read it if you guys want.
Perhaps I can just first ask both Edmund and Rafiq if they are okay to accept Mary's amendment as friendly.
This is Edmund. Yes, definitely accept it.
Thank you, Edmund. Rafiq?
Yes, it's a friendly amendment.
Thank you. Christina, you done?
Just give me 30 seconds. Well, I'll just go ahead and read it. Never mind. All right. This request is seen as urgent because there are conditions under which it may be appropriate for applicants to request extended review for a string which has been denied further processing based on a finding of confusing similarity in the initial evaluation. This extended review would evaluate extenuating circumstances in the application that may result in a finding of no detrimental confusion, notwithstanding the initial evaluation. This may occur inter alia in cases such as the same registry operator for an existing GTLD or a proposed new GTLD could apply for a string that although similar to an existing or applied for string, is not detrimentally similar from a user point of view. For example, it is possible that an applicant could apply for both a GTLD with a conventional ASCII label and a corresponding internationalized GTLD, but that could be found confusingly similar in the initial evaluation, but not result in the detrimental user confusion that the GNSO recommendation was trying to avoid. A situation where there is an agreement between a new applicant registry operator and the registry operator of an existing GTLD that allows for better service for the users in the geographical area where the new GTLD will be offered. For example, MuseDOMA, the registry operator for Dot Museum, could enter into an agreement with a new GTLD applicant to offer an IDN version of Dot Museum for a specific language community. The two strings might be found confusingly similar in the initial evaluation, even though the delegation of both would not cause detrimental confusion.
Thank you, Christina. And just so everyone's clear, Christina's amendment concerns the letter. Mary's concerns the motion itself. Edmund, Rafiq, any discussion around that, first of all? So, Edmund, Rafiq, would you consider Christina's edits as friendly?
This is Edmund, yes, for sure. In fact, I think it makes good clarification on the item as yes.
Thank you, Rafiq.
Just have a question. And point one, because Christina used it first, determinantly similar, and after, confusingly similar. So I'm not getting the point in this.
I'm sorry, Rafika, I wasn't clear as to what the question is.
Yeah, because you said that it's not in the. And the first point is not determinantly similar. From user point of view, and after user that could be found confusingly similar. So I am confused because you use different. Because for me, it don't have the same meaning if you say determinantly similar to and confusingly similar.
I don't really. I mean, my understanding is that the whole point, it's not detrimentally similar if it's not confusingly similar. So I don't have a strong feeling of the language one way or the other. You know, I'm just trying to go for a little bit of clarity. If you think that's not clear, I'm not wedded to it.
Rafiq, would you be okay with leaving it like that, or do you need it clarified?
Okay, I see it's friendly. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so you're accepting that as friendly?
Yes.
Good, thanks. So could we have the modified motion up? I don't know if it's possible to do that quickly enough, but if someone from staff can handle that, that would be great. Can someone from staff do that now? Or would that be too slow? Oh, it's up, is it? Okay, thanks, Marika. So in that case, just because the motion has changed a lot since the it was initially presented, Edmund, can I just ask you to read the new version before we vote on it?
Sure. It's
the one up on the Adobe now.
It's a bit long, and including the letter or...
No, just the motion. Unless someone wants the letter read, but in the interest of time, I suggest we just read the motion.
Okay. So, whereas the draft applicant guidebook version 3, it still says version 3 here because when it was proposed, it was version 3. So, whereas the draft applicant guidebook version 3 does not include an extended review option for strings that fail the initial evaluation for confusing similarity and likelihood to confuse. The GNSO Council recognizes that time is of the essence in sending feedback to ICANN staff on the draft applicant guidebook. The IDNG drafting team established by the GNSO Council has discussed various circumstances where applicants for strings that may be designated as confusingly similar in the initial evaluation may be able to present a case showing that the string is not detrimentally similar to another string. The GNSO Council, in recommendation number 2 on the GNSO final report on the introduction of new GTLDs in September 2007, intended to prevent confusing and detrimental similarity and not similarity that could serve the users of the Internet. Resolved that a 21-day public comment period be opened not later than 11th June 2010 regarding a proposal to send the following letter to Kurt Fritz with copy to the ICANN board, requesting that Module 2 in the next version of the draft applicant guidebook regarding outcomes of the string similarity review be amended to allow applicants to request an extended review under applicable terms similar to those provided for other issues such as DNS stability string review procedure. ICANN staff prepare a summary and analysis of the public comments not later than 6th of July 2010. The GNSO Council takes action in its meeting of 15th July 2010 regarding whether or not to send the letter. Further resolved that this motion shall not serve as a precedent requiring that GNSO Council to requiring the GNSO Council to adhere to a public comment period for any future GNSO Council letters.
Thanks very much, Edmund. I would suggest, actually, that it might be useful for someone to suggest a friendly amendment to change that to version 4 of the DAG, but that's just a suggestion if someone's willing to do that. It would make the motion more current, and it wouldn't change...
Stefan, I had my hand
yeah,
up.
Yeah, sorry, Chuck.
There is no change in DAG 4 in this regard, so I think it would make sense to change that to DAG 4.
So could you make that as a friendly amendment, perhaps?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. And
it's accepted as, in fact, when I started reading it, I thought that would make sense.
Okay, Rafiq?
Sorry, I didn't hear it well. Can you please?
We're suggesting that, as you can see, the motion has now been changed to have a friendly amendment in the first bullet point to have version 4 instead of version 3 for the DAG. Would you accept that as a friendly amendment?
Oh, yes.
Thank you. Any more discussion on this before I call for a vote? Wendy, you have your hand up. And Chuck, is your hand still up? I guess
no.
Not. Okay. Wendy?
Yes. Rather than extending the examples in the letter, I would propose to strike them entirely because I think that there's probably substantial disagreement about what non-detrimental confusion is, although we might all agree that non-detrimental confusion is possible.
What are you suggesting, that we change?
That we strike the examples, the sentence beginning, this may occur inter alia, and the bulleted examples below it be deleted from the letter.
So you're suggesting that we strike Christina's amendment that's been accepted as friendly, is that correct?
I'm suggesting as a further amendment that we strike the examples entirely.
So we would delete on that the second to last bullet point in the letter from the word for example to
no from earlier from before the bullet points this
it's
from
people.
From the sentence this may occur inter alia in cases such as okay. And delete the cases
this may occur inter alia, and then move on to the next bullet point.
And then move on to, we thank you for your prompt attention.
Okay, thank you. So you would, we would have, if I'm just read the end of the letter the way I understand what you're saying, this extended review would evaluate extenuating circumstances in the application that may result until the end of the initial evaluation, full stop, and then we thank you for your prompt, prompt attention. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Christina?
I definitely understand what I think Wendy's reasoning is for that. I'm just really concerned that if we don't have examples, the public comment period is just going to be a debacle, and that people aren't going to really know what it is that we're trying to identify in terms of potential situations. And then given that it's a short public comment period anyway, I'm just concerned that we're going to further handicap not only the ability of the community to comment in a way that is helpful to them, but also helpful to us.
Wendy, would you be willing to accept that that is helpful for people who might comment, or do you want that amendment to be considered by the motioneers?
My alternative clearly is to put this into a public comment, and I can do that.
Okay, so would you drop that?
Since I don't hear signs of people believing the amendment to be friendly, I'll drop it.
Thank you, Wendy. David?
Thanks, Stefan. No, I was just going to follow up on Christina there, because I actually really liked Chuck's example of the .cym and the .com, which I think covers a point there, and I'd almost suggest that we add that in as another example, but open to comment.
But you're not suggesting. You'd almost suggest it, but you're not suggesting it. Is that correct?
Well, if anybody else wants to agree it, then, you know, that's fine with me. But I liked it.
Well, I'll say that characteristic unclarity as not being a suggested friendly amendment, and try and move on to a vote. Does anyone want to say anything else? Would anyone object to a voice vote on this? Hearing no objections, Glenn, could you please call a voice vote on this, please?
I'll do that, Stefan. Bill Drake.
Yes.
Stefan Van Gelder.
Yes.
David Taylor.
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach?
In favor.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes.
Deborah Hughes?
Yes.
Christina Rosette?
Yes.
Jamie Wagner?
Yes.
Tim Ruiz?
Tim's no longer on the call, Glenn.
Oh. Yes, I see. Sorry, you're disconnected. Wendy Seltzer?
Yes.
Chuck Gomes?
Yes.
Zahid Jamil?
Yes.
Adrian Kinderis is absent. Rafik Demek?
Yes.
Terry Davis is absent. Mary Wong?
Yes.
Edmund Chun?
Yes.
Rosemary Sinclair?
Yes.
Caroline Greer?
Yes.
Borfu Rieknoben?
Yes.
In the contracted party house, we have five yes votes, and two people are absent. In the non-contracted party house, we have we have 13 yes votes.
So I take it the motion carries.
Yes. 13 in the non-contracted party house and 5 in the contracted party house.
So, Glenn, can we consider that the motion has carried?
The motion has carried, Stefan.
Thank you very much, Glenn. And thanks, everybody. Chuck, it's your meeting again.
Thank you, Stefan. Well done. Let's go to item 5, the AGP policy questions. There was recently posted a semi-annual update on the AGP results for a six-month period. Craig, would you please give maybe just a one-minute overview of that report? I think people can look at it and see the details themselves.
Yes, certainly, and thanks again for the opportunity to share this with you. Some of the highlights of the report are that the data reflects that while the number of requests from the last reporting period to this reporting period has gone up by a little bit, so have the number of partial or full approval of the requests. And I think the reason why more requests are being approved is because the registries and the registrars are working more closely together to document what the problems are. So I think it's a good thing for the registries and also a good thing for the registrars. With regard to the total number of AGP deletes, it's still holding steady at around 60,000 per month. And I think it's important to remember that the 60,000 includes all AGP deletes, not just those that are above the thresholds defined in the policy. So it's a pretty raw number. Unless you break it down, it doesn't mean a lot other than the fact that it's much less than the millions of domains a month that it used to be. And then lastly, last highlight is that of the 23 requests that have been processed since the policy was implemented, there's been just one case of a registrar making more than one request, and at that registrar has only made 2 requests in the last year. So the notion of a request recurring regularly doesn't seem to be happening. And again, I think the report says, and as the last report did, that the policy seems to be working. There haven't been more registrar complaints that I'm aware of or that have been shared with ICANN through registries. So there's the two-minute highlight of where we are.
Thank you, Craig, very much. Any questions or comments on that? Okay, Mary.
Thanks, Chuck. This isn't about the report as such, and I apologize if this is something I should know. This is more about the questions that were posed to council as part of the report. So bearing in mind the whole work prioritization exercise, I guess I'm just wondering, and this is a question for everybody, staff as well as fellow councillors, is this something that people think we should do, and if so, in terms of what the council is going to consider modifying, would this be something that would have to go through a PDP process?
It's a good question, Mary. And since you jumped in and went ahead to the discussion of the questions, let me see, first of all, if Christina has a question not related to item 5.4 on the agenda.
No, my question is related to item 5.4.
Okay, then what I suggest is that we go through item 5.4. These are the questions that we deferred from the last meeting, and take them one at a time and get some feedback, and everybody be encouraged to participate. The first question is, should the council consider modifying the AGP limits policy to no longer require semiannual updates? As I recall, and Craig, you can set me straight on this if I'm wrong, actually, in the policy that was approved, it required semiannual updates. Is that correct?
It did for 2 years before 2 years after implementation.
Okay. So if we changed, and it was implemented what date?
April 1, 2009.
Okay, so it would go through April of 2011, right, that would be required. So I think the answer to your question, Mary, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, is yes, it would require a change to the policy. Would we need a full-blown PDP? It could probably be a really simple one, and I think that PDP working team is probably working on things like that won't help us now, but if we wanted to change it now. But I think we could keep it relatively simple on something like that if we wanted to change it, as long as there was good public input and so forth. So let's deal with that if we decide that it should be changed. What I'd like to open up is discussion on whether there's opposition to changing that right now, in other words, the first bulleted question there, or leaving it the same. I think I shared on the last meeting that the registry stakeholder group would be comfortable with changing it to annual, but we wouldn't be comfortable eliminating it entirely. Now, that particular recommendation, considering if this thing only goes for 2 years, isn't very useful, I don't think, but we hadn't checked that. Let me go to the queue. Christina.
If you're wondering, no, it depends, are my answers to the questions. I do think that we should continue to have the semi-annual updates, particularly since again, I think we'll have to revisit this next April, but I do think it's going to be an important tool to have access to in terms of tracking information, particularly as new GTLDs launch. I think, although I was originally a very strong proponent of the Council modifying the policy to define extraordinary circumstances that reoccur regularly, I think at this point it gives us greater flexibility to not do so. In terms of should instances of consumer fraud automatically be a legitimate use of AGP deletes, my concern with making that an automatic legitimate use is how you define it and how you avoid gaming of that. And then finally, in terms of proactive taking down of domains, I think it really depends as to whether it should go above the threshold on a case-by-case basis in terms of what I would be and what I think the IPC would be most comfortable with.
Thank you. Mike?
I agree completely with everything Christina just said, and I would just add that I don't feel like this is enough of a priority to warrant any more council time. We should just let the next couple semi-annual reports happen, and we can address it, next spring if there's anything more to address. But it seems like at that point, if the reports stay as they've been, then there's probably nothing more to discuss. And in particular, on extraordinary circumstances, I haven't heard any registrars coming to the council or coming through their council reps asking for council to consider this. Given that we have so many other priorities, I think we should just drop this one off of our agenda.
Thank you, Mike. Alan?
Yeah, I generally agree. I can't imagine a PDP, no matter how short, which would take less time than one more report being generated 6 months from now. Just the issues report itself would take more time than that. My only minor concern is on the fourth item, and I wouldn't want to see a registrar who is diligently responding to phishing problems and therefore making requests on a more than once be rejected because of the frequency of it. But I'll trust the registries will act reasonably on this.
Thank you, Ellen. And as I shared last time, I'm speaking from VeriSign, okay? And as you know, we get the bulk of these things. As long as it's properly documented, we honor it. If somebody just comes to us and says it's because of fraud, we don't honor it. They need to document it. But if they do that, we honor it. So what I'm hearing, and there's another hand up, Stefan.
Sorry, I was on mute. I just wanted to say that as far as the registrar stakeholder group is concerned, we actually haven't discussed Craig's gender item to depth. So I'm unable to say whether the registrars feel comfortable with the fact that we could suspend this or not. I just want to make that clear that there hasn't been that much discussion within our group on this subject yet.
Okay, and this has been on the agenda quite a while. So I'm going to make this suggestion, and if there's opposition to this, that's fine. I'm going to make the suggestion that, assuming that Craig thinks he has the answers to his questions here, that we do drop it for now, and if the registrars want to bring it up again, that they do that. Now, Craig, the first question then is to you. Do you think you have a sense, and obviously everybody didn't speak, but I'm not hearing anybody objecting to any of the things that have been said. Do you feel like you have the answers to the questions, at least for now?
Yeah, I think so, Chuck.
Okay, now if there's any that you need more clarity on, just say so. That's fine.
Well, what I thought I heard was that the semi-annual updates will continue through the end of the two-year reporting requirement, so there's no change.
Right.
And it doesn't sound like the council at this time is interested in spending more time and resources defining these two terms. However, it sounds like there's an opportunity, for example, for the registrar stakeholder group to come back and raise this. So it sounds like for the time being, it's dropped until it might be raised again in the future.
I think that's correct. Any comments on that from anyone on the call? Okay. Thank you very much, Craig, and thanks, everybody, for being prepared on this. I appreciate that. Now, we only have about 20 minutes left in our meeting, and I'm reticent to do this, but I don't know what else to do. I don't think the Who Is Studies topic is one that we were just going to get started in this meeting, and it's a very important one, so I don't feel that it's not important. But if we do that, that will take up the rest of our time. And if we do have any time left in our 2 hours when we cover some other things, I'm going to suggest we come back to that, or that we do cover it. And it is on the agenda, and we'll have considerable time on the agenda for this in Brussels. Any objections for right now tabling item 6? Okay, hearing none, seeing none. Let's go to item 7, the GNSO improvements, OSC recommendations from the Communications and Coordination Work Team. The final recommendations have been out there for a while. The public comments are out there. The public comment summary and analysis is there. Can you just take a couple minutes and talk about that, and then we'll open it up for questions if people have questions, and maybe spend more time on questions and answers instead of
Yeah, this is Ken Bauer. Thank you, Chuck. Yes, I'll try to be brief in respect to the time. The CCT's final consolidated report is essentially broken up into three main chapters, actually four. There's a beginning, background, the normal background stuff, and then there's a conclusion section. The two meaty sections are in chapters 2 and 3. And the CCT broke itself into two sub-teams in looking at its mission and all of the things it had to consider. And they essentially break out as to a set of technology recommendations that deal with communications from that aspect, and then the rest of them more in terms of coordination and communication and those kinds of things. Let me just talk briefly about the technology recommendations. In essence, they deal largely with website, the GNSO website. The problems there are legion and don't need to be discussed, I don't think. There are a number of concrete recommendations specifically that deal with the website. Those were motivated largely by a couple of key documents that were developed by the team. One was a set of business requirements that was done last summer, and then followed up by a website survey that was conducted by Scott Pinzon, as well as ICANN, which did an extensive survey of over 230 users. All of that was put together, and then another sub-team started to develop wireframes and actually really designed what the new GNSO site should look like. Many of you have seen the products of that work that was reviewed in Seoul in a number of different forums and settings. The feedback that the staff has received and the team has been very positive with respect to that design, and obviously upon the council's adoption of this report, then the sort of implementation step can go full steam ahead, and a lot of work has already been done to get that rolling. There were some other recommendations of technology that dealt with document management and collaboration, but they were largely put off to a second phase due to technical concerns. The second major section of the CCT's final report dealt with the larger aspect of communications and coordination between ICANN structures, particularly the GNSO and the board, the SOs and the ACs, and a number of other elements around that. The team noted a whole slew of different communications problems, and it really was not constrained in thinking about it in terms of just voice or just data or something. The report talks a lot about the clutter of communications, the respect of people to each other and civility, and a number of other issues along those lines. And in section 5 of that chapter, there are a whole series of recommendations to deal with soliciting community feedback, how to improve board and GNSO communications, how to improve cross communications between the supporting organizations and the advisory committees, other issues around work prioritization and complexity, the different kinds of the ways we can make communications cleaner, clearer, make objectives more easy to understand, and so forth and so on. And I hope that will give you a general idea. It's a very comprehensive report. It's over 20 pages long, including a number of attachments and exhibits. And at that, I'll see if that basically accomplishes the job, Chuck, and turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Ken, and thanks to the working team that worked very hard on this and created a great report. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, let's go ahead and go to the motion. And since I made it, and if nobody objects, I'll skip the whereases and just read the resolves. Anybody object to me doing that? I see a hand up. Bill.
Sorry, I asked a question in the chat box. We had somebody in our constituency asking about a process point and the work team responses to public comments. There was some concern expressed about how that was handled, and I just wondered if somebody could explain that to me because I wasn't directly involved.
Sure. It was someone from your constituents who raised the questions. There were four public comments. Three of them were relevant. One of them was irrelevant. The working team did review those comments and the analysis of those comments and did not feel like they warranted any changes to the recommendations. Some of them were more process-related than actually related to the recommendations. Now, I do know that one of the comments, I believe, came from the ALAC, and it was from Alan. So if Alan would like to comment with regard to those comments, I'd be more than happy to allow him to do that.
I certainly would like to take a moment to do that. One of our concerns, and I believe it was a very strong one, was the recommendation said that work group charters, and I don't remember if it was PDP or work group in general, charters should include proposed outcomes. And I feel very strongly that the outcomes should come out of the process, out of the work group itself, and not be dictated ahead of time by council by limiting what the outcomes can be.
Yeah, and Alan, I saw that comment, but when I read the report, I didn't get the sense that they were trying to define the outcomes in terms of, meaning recommendations, but rather they need to produce, these deliverables. Recommendations would be one of the deliverables.
Well, I don't have the report in front of me. My recollection was it either said what the outcomes were or the types of outcomes. In other words, that this PDP should come out with consensus policy or best practices or things like that. I said I don't have it in front of me, but there was a clear message that the council should set what kinds of outcomes, if not the specific ones, are expected. And I think that that's incorrect. I think the working group has to be given the scope to decide on what the problem is and what the solution is.
Well, having been on the OSC and worked at least indirectly with that team, I don't think that was the intent at all. I think their intent was to really define deliverables. What are you expected to do, and so forth. Do you want to amend the resolution to with a clarifying statement that there's no intent to define the recommendations, to predefine the recommendations that are expected?
I'm trying to pull up what the exact wording is. If you go to any other comments and come back to me in a minute, I'll try to find it.
Okay. Well, unless there are other people that want to comment, we're ready to vote on the motion. So.
Chuck, my only comment would be the process point. It seems like if we're going to have public comments, that it would be reasonable to expect some sort of response to them. No?
That's not unreasonable. The staff did analyze them, but I don't think they gave a response. We're a group of volunteers. Who's going to volunteer to write a response to this? A little bit different than ICANN full staff and ICANN making decisions, and they have staff that can do that. We asked the working team. The working team was all volunteers. Certainly the response from the working team could be communicated to those. I assume Alan probably saw the response from Mason Cole, who was the chair of the working team. If it would be helpful, I can give myself an action item and ask that be forwarded, or it's on the council, it's a public list in terms of the responses. That's an area that the council really hasn't dealt with in terms of responding to public comments that are just GNSO related. It's one more task that I'm not sure who's going to do it.
Chuck, the wording in the report was workgroup charters should be drafted with careful attention to the issues or questions that should be considered and the outcomes desired. And it's the "and the outcomes desired" that I think is a little bit too specific. And if you remember correctly, in the current Pedner one, the charter did include what kinds of outcomes were desired, and then I objected at that point in that one. And
would you be more comfortable, it said, with the deliverables desired?
I'm not quite sure what that definition of deliverables is.
Well, I have a different definition of outcomes than you do, too. I used a much more... You're thinking very specific outcomes. Here's what's expected of the group. It's a statement of work, but not to determine what they should recommend, or the
form the recommendations take.
Right. Yeah. I can confidently say that those recommendations didn't intend what you're suggesting it may intend. I'm not saying the language is perfect, but if you've got a suggested change in the language, please put it forward.
Yeah, at this late moment, I don't have something. Council can either delay this till the next meeting, or go on and take action at this point. I'm not in a position to formally propose something in any case.
Would you rather it be delayed till the next meeting?
I certainly would. It would give me a chance to look at the exact wordings and make the case.
I'll accept that request, and we'll delay this until the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. All right. So we have, and Bill, I think that we ought to, what I would suggest, Bill, on your suggestion is that you put as we're dealing with the working group model recommendations that are going to be discussed in Brussels, that you might want to put that forward, because that is an important thing that you're suggesting is some sort of response, and we're going to have to figure out how we do that. But it's still a valid point, even if it's a challenge. So I certainly suggest that you make that recommendation and that we consider that further. Going on then to item 8, other business. It's fairly quick, except for the agendas for the Brussels meetings. Are posted. They've been out there for a little bit. Are there any questions or comments on that? And while you're thinking about that, I want to especially thank Stefan and Glenn for the many, many hours they spent on a very tough job finding places for everything. So thanks very much to both of you for doing that. And does anybody have any questions or comments on the agendas for the GNSO agendas for Brussels? Okay. Then the other items, yes? Was there someone?
Sorry. Yes, that was Bill. Sorry. I just lost track of where we are in the discussion about what topics we're going through with the board and with the GEC. Was that resolved? Because I didn't process that it had been.
Yeah, I did send a message in that regard. What we did, based on the feedback that was received, I picked the top two topics that there was a lot of support for, which is basically and Giannis was comfortable with that. Now, since then, Bruce Tonkin has come back after he found out that there's no GNSO liaison on the council no GAC liaison on the GNSO council. And that was, of course, at the GAC's choice, and suggested that maybe we want to raise that issue just to see whether they would like to appoint one. As some of you know, we had a GAC liaison, and the GAC liaison never showed up. So there's not too much we can do about that. But that's it. So it was the agenda items that were on there was new GTLDs in particular with regard to public morality and so forth, which is a topic that Giannis had suggested. And what was the second one? I'm blank right now.
That's okay. I didn't read that as closure. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
reporting, because very few people had responded. So.
Yeah, I know. That's correct. But what I did is I went by the ones who responded. And for those who responded, there was pretty good agreement on that. And I think the other one was the AOC. And so to do more than two in a meeting with that many people seems unrealistic. So.
And for the board dinner, I'm looking at your email. There's five people talking about internet governance and two on board discontent and two on AOC. So what are we doing there?
Well, Bruce Tonkin, I also sent around a little survey because nobody else developed one, so I went ahead and developed a little survey that I sent around, and I didn't get any feedback on it, so I went ahead and sent it to Bruce. Bruce has sent that little survey to the board members asking for their feedback, and he has promised to get back to me with the feedback from the board. So one possibility is to have different topics at different tables depending on board interest and counselor interest. So in other words, we may discuss all of those if there's enough interest, just at different tables.
Okay. Thank you.
If you have any more thoughts on that, please suggest them. But that's where it's at, and that's why I wanted to cover these any other business items because of that, so that you're aware. The last thing under any other business, I sent a message to Kirk. Kirk's, I assume, still on the call this week with regard to geographical names. I did that on my own as chair, not having time to get it out in advance, but just suggesting that it's important that the GNSO be involved in some of these reserve names discussions with regard to geographical names, et cetera, because we approved recommendations that were made by the Reserve Names Working Group as part of the new GTLD process. Those have been changed drastically since we started, and I'm not saying I made it clear in there. Some of those are probably well justified, but please don't leave the GNSO out of this process because there are also competitive issues between CCTLDs and GTLDs and so forth. I just wanted to call that to your attention that I sent that. If there's any concern about me sending that, please speak up. And I need to go to the queue. And Christina, you had your hand up a long time ago, and I apologize for that.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure that I was clear that Sunday is the deadline for motions or agenda items for our meeting in Brussels. Is that right?
It's 8 days.
And, oh, it's 8 days. Okay.
It's 8 days.
Okay.
So, no,
right.
I hope it's not that soon, Christina.
Okay. It's Tuesday then.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
They do have to be in soon.
Okay.
You're right.
That's all I have.
Thanks for asking that. So our meeting's on the 23rd. So what is that? That's probably
the 15th.
Yeah, the 15th. Okay. Thanks a lot. That's a good point to make. And Stefan.
Yeah, Chuck. I just wanted to express my support for the note you sent, Kurt. I know you didn't have time to consult with the council, but I think it was well thought out to do that. I do think we need to be involved in that.
Thank you, Stefan. And if anybody thinks otherwise, please communicate. I thought it was because of everything that's going on. I thought it was useful to send it out right away. But I made it very clear that it was me speaking, not the whole council, because I didn't have time to do that. So. Anything else on that? Okay, now we're out of time. We did not go back to the GNSO endorsement process. I think it would have, what's the sense of the council? My inclination is to go ahead and defer that until Brussels. We will have to make a decision there on the process because our next meeting isn't until the 15th of July, and the end of the call for applicants is the 15th of July. So unless people strongly want to go overtime on this meeting, we'll defer that as well as who is to the meeting in Brussels. And I have Wendy in queue.
Yes, just as a process suggestion, is it possible to move to vote on the unamended motion now rather than deferring it and letting motions on the amendments on the table be a means of deferring the vote?
If people are willing to spend a little more time on that, I'm okay with that because you're right, it could pass. Now, is there any objection to me at least finding out the amendments have been sent via email if you haven't seen them? Is there any opposition to at least finding out whether those are friendly amendments? I think we at least ought to give a shot for those before we take a vote.
I don't know. I was trying to propose the quickest we take a vote on the motion as it stood at the commencement of this meeting.
I understand that, and I'm not going to prolong it with the amendments. If they're friendly, then I think we should honor those. If they're not, then it's going to take take more time. So we will probably defer. I thought, out of respect to the people that proposed those, that we ought to at least find out whether Bill and Caroline find those as friendly. Bill, have you had a chance to look at those?
Yes, I have, and I have to say that sometimes the binary choice of friendly or unfriendly doesn't quite capture your feeling. But I have to say I think it's unfriendly. I do.
Okay, that's okay. And unless people want to spend another 15 or 20 minutes on this call, then I would suggest that we postpone that decision until our meeting on the 23rd of June. And
so is it procedurally proper to make a motion for a vote on the unamended motion? If it fails, it fails. But
I think you can make that motion. Is there a second for it?
I second it.
Okay. All right. Then is there any more discussion? Okay, Wolf?
Yes, thank you, Chuck. Well, I'm sorry about this to say that. So in this case, really, I would like to formally ask for a delay. So and as I pointed out, there is from a stakeholder group, there is a request to take more time. It's not too much time. Well, until Brussels book would be enough, and I would be very happy to get this time. But in this case, I really have to make this formally.
And we have a practice. It's not written anywhere, I don't think, but we have a practice of honoring any stakeholder group's request to ask for more time. Unless I'm interpreting things wrong, I think I need to honor that request. We will deal with this issue in Brussels. And I would like to just, I hope this doesn't come across as preachy or whatever, but, you know, a lot of these things, we go to a lot of effort to try to make sure every group is represented in developing these things and so forth, and encouraging people to communicate with their groups and come, you know, to terms in a timely manner on these things. And I certainly encourage people to do that. And at the same time, I understand the complexities of the world that we all live in. So I respect Wolf's request. And if there is nothing else, is there anything else before I adjourn the meeting? All right. Meeting adjourned. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Hello.